Thanks for listening to Chicago's Morning Answer podcast, sponsored by Signature Bank. Signature Bank takes pride in helping customers grow their business and provide unmatched banking expertise, custom financial solutions, and the industry's best technology. So whether you're a business looking for a deposit relationship or needs a ready source of financing, Signature Bank is the right bank for you. Call today at 773-467-5600 to hear how Signature Bank can help your business grow and thrive. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.
This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560, The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy.
Smells like cigars in here. How was it?
Yeah, we had our smoker with Prager last night. It was a good time, as always. Dennis is a font of knowledge, as I'm sure most of our listeners know. They've listened to Dennis Prager. And so it was a great time. Good turnout, as always, sold out. And good questions. It was a lovely evening over cigars and a couple of adult beverages. So thanks to all who attended. We appreciate it. One of the issues that came up yesterday, and it came up yesterday before our discussion, was the issue of ballot integrity. Why did it come up? Well, it comes up in a lot of forms, but one of the positive forms it's taken is the form of Ron DeSantis in Florida. Here we go again. Ron DeSantis has moved on continuing to improve upon Florida's administration of elections. He's banned Zuckerbucks. He's banned ballot harvesting. He's attached real penalties to counties that don't properly maintain their voter rolls. All basic things that shouldn't be particularly partisan in nature, not disenfranchising anybody.
No, it shouldn't be celebrated, but he's the only one doing it.
And some things that could be done here, things that we could have Republican candidates running on. We should, in part. What disenfranchises people is voter fraud. And that was the topic of Ron DeSantis' announcement yesterday, because one of the other things he did was essentially create a ballot security agency, an election fraud agency in the state of Florida.
The state of Florida has charged and is in the process of arresting 20 individuals across the state for voter fraud. Now, the majority of these people illegally voted in Palm Beach, Broward, and Miami-Dade, although there are others in other parts of the state. These folks voted illegally in this case, and there's going to be other grounds for other prosecutions in the future. They are disqualified from voting because they've been convicted of either murder or sexual assault, and they do not have the right to vote. They have been disenfranchised under Florida law. And Amendment 4 that passed specifically included people that have been convicted of sexual assault and homicide from being able to have an automatic restoration of their voting rights. And so they did not go through any process. They did not get their rights restored. And yet they went ahead and voted anyways. That is against the law. And now they're going to pay the price for it. So they will be charged. They are being charged and arrested today with election fraud. This is a third degree felony in the state of Florida. They could face a $5,000 fine and up to 5 years in prison for illegally voting in our elections.
312-642-5600, turnkey.pro answer line, 64636-DA, turnkey.pro text line. Useful to raise as an issue, and DeSantis is most often proportional in his characterizations of these things, which is appropriate. It's not real. It doesn't happen. Well, it does. It's not systemic. No one's claiming it is. It's not throwing an election one way or the other, probably in advance of November in Florida. But the point is, 20 people that vote illegally under Florida law are eliminating the votes of 20 people who vote legally. So it seems this was always a simple issue to me. It seems like if the idea of it is to protect everyone's franchise, to use the language, make sure everyone's vote counts and counts equally. then it necessarily means that you eliminate people who vote illegitimately. I mean, I don't know what is complicated about this.
And even
this.
If you suggested, like, hey, when was the last time we cleaned the voter rolls?
Yes.
In Cook County, you even suggested, oh, you don't believe the last election was true.
You want to clean? You. No, you want to clean the voter rolls of black people or people of color. So,
well, that's true. Yeah.
Ridiculous. I mean, right. They have to come up with these silly responses because you just can't get around that simple proposition I just offered. If you want to make sure everyone's vote counts and counts equally, then you necessarily have to prohibit and attach penalties to those who would disenfranchise their fellow citizen by voting illegally. I wish there was more to say on it, but it's pretty simple. What you get into is them trying to pull you off on those tangents by suggesting that there's some nefarious motive afoot to disenfranchise this group of people or that group of people who you don't think are going to vote for the candidates that you're voting for and so on and so forth. And it really isn't the case. It just isn't.
I mean, you can already early vote here in Illinois for the governor's. Not early vote, but I'm
you
saying
can request your absentee ballot. Yeah.
Yeah, I got that about a week ago because I signed on to the JB campaign. Breaking news, you can sign up now to get your mail-in ballot and vote early. But the longer you have an election going on, the more vulnerable it becomes.
Well,
and that's one thing. And that's one thing that COVID changes the way we vote.
Well, it changed it in some states.
Well, here it did. Yeah.
It changed in some states, and some states like Florida have gone back to what life was like pre-COVID.
Good.
Where you're not doing these mass mail-outs of ballots. Now, other states, these things are, this was a conversation piece last night at the Prager event. These are state and local matters. So what's happening in Florida under DeSantis is obviously wildly different than what's happening in Illinois under Pritzker. And that's something else that people who are serious about free and fair elections may want to factor in when they consider their votes for governor and on down the ballot in this state at the state and local level.
You, when you're growing up, did you always expect free and fair elections because we're not some third world country? And now we have a lot of vulnerabilities in the system.
Well, the point is just to say the people who run around, it's not real, it's not a thing, and so on and so forth. Well, we can direct your attention to Hans van Spakovsky and the Heritage Foundation database on voter fraud, arrests, and convictions over the last couple of decades. We can direct your attention to the one-off stories like Ron DeSantis's announcement yesterday. If you don't think it matters if other people's votes are being taken away, how about we take away yours?
312-642-5600 is our turnkey.pro answer line. You can also text us at 64636. Type in DA, then a quick comment.
Since we're on the topic of DeSantis, too, I just wanted to cover the response that he got from that Florida prosecutor from Hillsborough County, Andrew Warren, who he removed from his position for announcing that he was going to abrogate his duties as a local prosecutor. Warren has now filed suit against DeSantis, and he went on to MSNBC.
Of course.
Where else? To make his case.
Well, it's not. I mean, Tiffany, the governor's broken two laws here. I mean, first, he's violated my free speech rights by retaliating against me because I spoke out on two of his favorite culture war issues, abortion and transgender rights. And secondly, he's violated the Florida Constitution by abusing his power to suspend me without any legal justification. So we filed this lawsuit because we want to make sure that even though Ron DeSantis is still the governor of Florida, the First Amendment has meaning and the Florida Constitution has meaning. And most importantly, elections have meaning.
That's a nice try. But here's the thing. Mr. Warren is sort of glossing over. You didn't announce that I disagree with Ron DeSantis's positions on abortion or gender reassignment surgeries for minors. You said, as a county prosecutor, because this is what he said, I will not enforce those laws. I will not enforce the 15-week, the post-15-week prohibition on abortions. I will not enforce the prohibition on gender reassignment surgeries for minors. I will not enforce. That's not I disagree. That's announcing you're not going to do your job as a prosecutor to uphold the rule of law, duly passed laws consistent with the Florida Constitution and, frankly, the United States Constitution as well. So that's just specious, and it shows you what a bad prosecutor this guy is, that he thinks he can get away with that argument, as weak as it is. And then with respect to the Florida Constitution, he doesn't have the right. It's black letter law. It's statutory law in Florida. Statute passed by the duly elected state legislature there that confers the power to the governor, not Ron DeSantis specifically, but to the governor to remove local officials who announce that they're not going to do their jobs, who have engaged in malfeasance, who have abrogated their duties. I mean, it's pretty straightforward.
For political reasons.
And frankly, you know, consistent with the laws we wish we had, at least from my perspective, in Illinois governing elections, here's a law that I would encourage, and it may be attractive to both sides to some extent, you know, residing this power with the governor, the power that Ron DeSantis and the governor of Florida that comes after him to remove local officials. You know, that's a lot easier than a recall. And the buck stops with the executive. I mean, and if it's done willy-nilly for transparently political reasons where there's no underlying substance to it, then there'll be a political price to pay and perhaps a legal price. In this case, pretty solid legal footing. You know, but don't forget, Harvard, Ron DeSantis was Harvard law, too. So he knows a thing or two about the law. But, you know, this is the pick your head up and look around time. The things that other states do that make them so much better governed. That we don't.
Hey, business owners, is your business and money in good hands? Does your bank invest in your success? Hi, Mike Gallagher here, letting you know that when you need a relationship bank, Signature Bank makes commercial banking personal. I love these guys. Not only do they have expansive industry experience, a strong financial track record, but they're also highly capitalized for strategic growth. That's so important. That's why Signature Bank is my bank. They know what it means to grow a business by designing solutions that are right for you and only you. These are real people. They're ready to help. So reach out to my friends at Signature Bank. Make the call today. 773-467-5630. 773-467-5630. Or visit them online at signaturebank.bank. That's signaturebank.bank. Your business could be Signature Bank's next success story. Go online, signaturebank.bank, member FDIC, equal housing lender. Signature Bank.
Do here.
Hear about the big stories of the day, then talk about them right here on Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560. The Answer. America First with Sebastian Gorka. Today at 3, right before Sean Thompson at 4 on AM 560. The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy. President Trump received a bit of a cold shot from Laura Ingraham this week. Before we get to the particulars of the arguments that were made to unseal the affidavit and the opposition from DOJ to unseal it in toto. Laura Ingraham's comment this week that's gotten a bit of attention. Donald Trump's been a friend of mine for 25 years. I'm always very open about this on my show, but, you know, we'll see whether that's what the country wants. The country, I think, is so exhausted. They're so exhausted by the battle, the constant battle, that they may believe that, well, maybe it's time to turn the page if we can get someone who has all Trump's policies but who's not Trump. And I just, in the context of what the raid on Mar-a-Lago and what has transpired since and what will now transpire for, you can be sure, months at least on end, if that's where you're at with Trump or if it's contingent on how this thing turns out, let's see what the FBI, and I'm not just talking about with unsealing the affidavit, I mean talking about the underlying investigation, criminal investigation into Trump, and the effort of the Department of Justice, the Biden Department of Justice, to bring criminal charges against him, because that's clearly the effort that's underway.
Oh, yeah.
So does it turn on the outcome of this investigation? Are you where Laura Ingraham says people may come to be? Or has this just redoubled your commitment to Trump? Has it made Trump, somewhat of a martyr in your eyes because of, again, we expose the hyper-politicization and unequal treatment under the law of Trump as compared to, say, Hillary Clinton or the Biden family. And it makes the case even stronger that Trump needs to be back in 24 to run again.
312-642-5600, turnkey.pro, answer line 646-36. Type in DA, then a quick comment, because a number of news media outlets hired an attorney for the media companies, Deanna Shulman, trying to get this information, trying to get a copy of the affidavit.
It is not the government's job to tell the public what is meaningful in terms of the release of its own information.
But what media outlets did get was newly unsealed court documents that revealed more about the exact law. Are you ready for this? That investigators say have been broken. Willful retention of national defense information. Number two, concealment or removal of government records. And number three, obstruction of federal investigation. So that sounds sinister. It sounds like the FBI is going after him. And I can't wait for the affidavit, which is going to be heavily redacted, which should be released next week at some time.
Yeah, the Department of Justice will make recommendations on what they would like redacted, and then the judge in the case will make a decision on what is made public. Yeah, I mean, there's the laws with respect to documents and obstruction of justice. Yeah, I mean, there's no surprise here.
Right. No, that was what one thing that was learned yesterday. And I wanted you to hear this because NBC's Mark Caputo, he was in the courtroom, and this is how he describes it.
What was it like to actually be inside the courtroom today?
You didn't know it was a former president. You would have thought it was a mob boss, because what they're talking about is obstruction of justice. They're talking about how witnesses are threatened and how obstruction of justice could occur if more information is released.
You and your D.C. press corps friends from NBC.
I'm just saying that it was not that it's a witch hunt.
Hysterical. That's a hysterical reporter. Let's take a step back and pretend like any of these people have any idea what they're talking about, have any appreciation for what the government's position is, and so the rhetoric they're going to use to defend and advance their position. They don't want the affidavit unsealed. So, of course, Juan Antonio Gonzalez, U.S. Attorney for the Southern District, who actually made the arguments in court, as opposed to this, this guy who's watched one too many episodes of The Sopranos.
Well, I
tell you what he said?
Tell me what he said.
Given the circumstances presented in this matter and the public interest in transparency and in the wake of the former president's public confirmation of the search, the government moved to unseal the warrant, but the affidavit supporting the search warrant prevents a very different set of considerations. Disclosure of the search warrant affidavit would irreparably harm the government's ongoing criminal investigation. The affidavit contains what Gonzalez calls highly sensitive information about specific investigative techniques, witnesses interviewed by the government. If it were disclosed, the affidavit would serve as a roadmap to the government's ongoing criminal investigation, providing specific details about its direction and likely course in a manner highly likely to compromise future investigative steps. Well, he also added that information about witnesses, particularly sensitive given the high-profile nature of the matter and the risk that revelation of witness identities would impact their willingness to cooperate with the investigation. Golly, that sounds like more than documents.
Right.
What a surprise. So the point is, and we talked about this earlier in the week with Andy McCarthy and yesterday with Dershowitz, that if they didn't commit a fraud on the court, then per the argument that he's making, depending on what's actually contained in the affidavit, they certainly didn't operate in good faith. And the public, allowing the public conversation to be about, it's about records and record retention and so on and so forth, when it's clearly about more than that. It's about records and record retention as the means to get to January 6th, as the means to develop an obstruction of justice case.
Right.
That's
why those three charges that came out, what they're looking for. I think Trump is screwed. And I know I've said that before, but I think this time, because they'll get the FBI, they do whatever they want. They roll over whoever they want. And I don't know how if he has enough money and attorneys in the world to help fight this. Uh-huh. Well, it's a fraudulent agency, I think, and I don't like what they're doing, but this is.
Gonzalez is the U.S. attorney's representations in court. The argument he made clearly indicates that they're still looking for additional informants who could help build a criminal case against President Trump and perhaps others.
Witnesses in the case whose identities could be compromised. Oh.
Well, that may be those that that have been identified, but there's other statements he made that insinuate what I'm suggesting.
I don't think redaction should be necessary. I want to see the whole thing.
And so, just so we understand actually what's happening, that became crystal clear yesterday. Earlier in the week, we were like, oh, you know, if it could it really just be about this? And of course, there were people like former prosecutors and who were suggesting, we don't know, but this is probably what they're doing. And now we know the probably what they're doing is what they're actually doing. Roger and DeKalb, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Hey, Dan, Amy, love the show, listen every day. And my support for Trump doesn't come from Trump, the personality or the man. It comes from the ideals, which amazingly align with almost all these groups that work against him, like 95%. But they never supported him because he didn't come from them. And that's why I did from the get-go. His problem was his agenda is pro-America. And your Karl Rove Bushes, they are not pro-America. It's globalism and American jobs and the fact that they, you know, they're just willing to outsource this entire country. My end of calling myself a Republican is when George Bush said, we are no longer a manufacturing society, we are a service economy. And that was the end of it for me from calling myself a Republican. I only vote for conservatives. And so it's just really frustrating that this wing, this 10% wing of true Republicans is trying to squeeze, you know, America out. So that's my opinion.
Thanks for the call, Roger. Tony in Downers Grove.
Hey, Dan, I'm kind of on the same page as the guy that just called. I mean, I'm about the policies. I'm not about his tweets, although that annoyed me. So I am, in the primary, if DeSantis were to run or someone who I think can carry similar policies out, I will vote for that person in the primary. If Trump is on the ballot, I will vote for Trump. That's where I'm at.
Thanks for the call, Tony. Mike Plano.
Hey, guys, you know what? I've been skeptical of Laura Ingraham for a while because she sells herself as this great populist, hardcore conservative, anti-China, this and that. You know, she speaks for all those conservatives in flyover country. But when you look at her background, she's lived on the East Coast her entire life, Connecticut, Northern Virginia. She goes back to the Reagan era. She's been in the Republican Party forever. So, and, you know, of course, she lives in a nice neighborhood there in Northern Virginia where she's probably surrounded by all those P-hat women. So I think some of the things that they said have rubbed off on her because occasionally, if you follow her show, which I do a little, you know, she'll spew out some rhino talking points about, oh, you know, the Republicans, they need to go after those suburban women who, you know, and you know who those are, or, you know, oh, well, you know, they might be tired of Trump. It's time to move on from Trump. And if you thought that was bad enough, you just look at her political endorsements the last couple of months, supporting Richard Irvin, mocking Carrie Lake and supporting Karen Taylor Robeson. And we obviously saw that backfire. So, yeah, I'm just very suspicious of her. I do think she has sincere beliefs. I think she lacks real political discernment.
Where are you on Trump?
Where am I on Trump? I'll gladly vote for him again if he's a nominee.
All right, thanks for the call, Mike.
But I think this move here is to make sure that he's not the nominee. And that maybe they'll...
Maybe.
There's something, really something smells with this one.
Suzanne in Mount Prospect.
Yes, there's a video out by Tom Klingenstein of the at the Claremont Institute. Mm-hmm. And he talks about that people want someone with Trump's virtues without his vices, but then explains very eloquently why he's the right man for this time. And where I maybe had been on the fence at one point, he really did a fantastic job of explaining why Trump's the right person. And I just wanted to recommend that video to anyone who might be sitting on the fence.
Thanks for the call, Suzanne. Terry, Rogers Park.
Yeah, as for getting someone other than Donald Trump to run for president, we want the man that had the guts to stand up for us first.
Okay. Yeah, there's that perspective. Thanks for the call, Terry. And may, you know, the man who would come back to the table with a reckoning on his mind, I reckon. So there's that argument to be made. You know, the counter, the sort of soft counter is, you know, whoever's best positioned to win in 2024.
Right.
Is that Trump or is that Ron DeSantis? I think that's yet to be clear. I mean, you can handicap it based on qualities that you like versus qualities that you don't like. But that was sort of the position that Prager took yesterday. I think there's merit to it.
Got a text message real quick. We got a lot of text messages on this, but one is, if he's elected again, the witch hunts will continue and continue and continue.
Well, that's right, but...
But he was still able to work through it when he had two impeachments.
Well, the other side is relentless, and so maybe there are less opportunities for them to go after, say, a President DeSantis, just to play it out. But they will find... or manufacture, as they did with the Russian collusion business, they will manufacture something against Ron DeSantis or whoever else is put up. I mean, that's who they are. What you're seeing with respect to Trump is a demonstration on who the new Marxists are. And they're not going to change their stripes. This is who they're going to be. Now, Trump presents, because of his business history and his approach to these things and his sort of seat of your pants approach to operating to some extent, and because of some of the poor choices he's made about the people with whom he's chosen to surround himself, perhaps he presents more targets for them. But again, if you don't present any targets, they'll manufacture one. So don't pretend, don't fool yourself into believing if Trump goes away, then we don't have any of this ugliness that exhausts us anymore, because ugliness is the stock and trade of the new left. Matt in South Bend, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Good morning. Thank you for taking my call, Dan and Amy. Was trying to say that if we can rise group, that seems to be the momentum, DeSantis and everybody else. I mean, I even thinking about Trump, I was thinking to myself, I said, you know, we can start working things with Donald Trump being in TV shows and maybe have something like, instead of Green Acres, we could make it Green Fakers, and he could be leading the charge for America First in all the things that the Green Deal is working on. So we've even got, instead of Mr. Haney, we've got Mr. Cheney with his hat on, and he can come out of his truck, fire up his shotgun by accident, so right. We can go that way.
And yeah,
so God bless everyone.
Shoot Arnold Ziffel, but he survives. Yeah, right. Thanks for
there
the call,
go.
Matt. Yeah, very good. Very good. Green Acres spin. Jim in Tampa, Florida, that is.
Hey guys. It's a unique moment in time. We need a unique figure that has an element of strength, intelligence, tactical slipperiness, the all-out guile and bravery that this guy has. He's a nut. He does a lot of silly things, surrounds himself not always with the right people, like you said, Dan. But this, I think to handicap this election like it's any election and to apply the basic filters like is this guy or that guy the best one is to not see the moment we're in and to not see that we need this kind of, like Victor Davis Hanson says, this side of Shane figure is needed. More than even in 2016. So I think if we go along and go away from Trump based on these considerations, oh, you know, his policies, yes, but he's not tweets, et cetera, I think is just a mistake. I think we got to get our guy in there that we know.
Well, so that's a statement on behalf of Trump, right? But I mean,
yes.
But the argument is, Jim, what if there are two Gary Coopers who show up at high noon?
Well, let's then, I mean, it's an argument on behalf of Trump because I see him as the Gary Cooper. If another Gary shows up, great. You know, and then Trump should get on board with that guy, whomever it is. Or maybe he isn't Gary Cooper. But I think right now there's one, and DeSantis is a younger one. Bring him in. And I think as DeSantis, you know, DeSantis is younger. And I like DeSantis. I live in Florida. He's great. You know, and I think this, I'd love to see DeSantis come in as the number two and then take over for 8 more years. I think that'd be awesome. But yeah, Gary Cooper, number two. Let's see the guy. Would love to see that.
Thanks, Jim. Tom, Blue Island.
Hey, good morning, Dan and Amy. You know, Dan, Dennis Prager last night spoke about defeating the left. And I think any capitulation where Trump, any attempt is made to sidestep Trump is accepting that the left is trying to destroy Mr. Trump. But moreover, Dan, I wanted to ask you, what light do you see between DeSantis and Trump where DeSantis would end up as a primary opponent? Both are MAGA Republicans, and Trump's primary record has shown that you could call the Republican Party the MAGA Party. And I'm wondering where you see the light is where they actually become adversaries in a primary.
Well, thanks for the call, Tom. I mean, I don't know that there's a lot of policy light. There's certainly light when it comes to personal history and
communication style.
Yeah, and it's style and management approach. But those things, you know, style and management approach, communication style management approach, they matter too.
Oh yeah, like I'll never forget. There was a hurricane, and Biden was there sitting next to DeSantis, and DeSantis looked presidential more so than Biden. It was very strange, but the way that he spoke to him, the way that he was, and he wasn't cantankerous, he wasn't rude, he was very respectful to Mr. Biden, but he, you know, he was like a doddering old fool, and DeSantis was like, yes, you know, thank you, and Biden gave him some praise back. It was just, I don't know, that was an interchange that I think people need to see.
Hear about the big stories of the day, then talk about them right here on Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer. This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560, The Answer.
Dan and Amy, you'd be hard-pressed to find an Illinoisan who doesn't claim to support small business, doesn't claim to appreciate the jobs small businesses create. So perhaps it would be worthwhile to actually listen to what job creators in Illinois say about making Illinois a place they would like to stay. There's a novel concept. So I put together this series for this pack that I'm running called Business Speaks, and all it is interviewing entrepreneurs, business people, all walks of life, some in corporate settings, some restaurant owners, and getting their perspective. Restaurant owners like our friend Spiro Rumpas, whose family owns Kai's on North Avenue in Glendale Heights. One of the first places we went, I think it was maybe the first place we went when Tom Sedeka organized the Rebel Lunch program during the lockdowns, during Pritzker's lockdowns, to help support local restaurants who were defying those lockdowns and saying, I'm going to keep my business open and keep feeding my family. Thank you very much. Here's a snippet of what Spiro has to say about doing business in Illinois.
You know, with the nonsense in the schools, the nonsense running a business here, the crime, I mean, it's just ridiculous. I mean, I'm very tired of Illinois, let's put it that way. It's just, it's frustrating. I shouldn't be having these thoughts or decisions. These policies that these people in Springfield and Chicago and DuPage County now are making are just, I think this is Illinois' last chance to get it right, because the direction we're going, I don't know if we'll ever recover. Illinois has got to change.
So candidates, particularly Republican candidates who want to be successful in Illinois, want to buck the trend this year with the landscape such as it is, providing for the opportunity to buck the trend. You better listen to what people like Spiro are saying, and you better address it. You better address what Spiro is saying. 312-642-5600, turnkey.pro answer line, 64636-DA, turnkey.pro text line. General exasperation across all of those quality of life institutions. One of them, his job, not because he doesn't love the restaurant, but because of the environment in which the restaurant is compelled to operate, being located in Glendale Heights. Two, public safety. Safety of his family, crime that he sees, including in DuPage County. Three, what's happening in the schools. If you're not addressing what it is like to work and live and send your kids to school in this state, then I don't know what the hell you're talking about, because that's all you should be talking about. 312-642-5600, turnkey.pro answer line, 64636-DA, turnkey.pro text line. And if you need some convincing, no less than Dem pollster Doug Schoen, who was an advisor to Clinton and Hillary.
I remember that guy.
Don't count out crime as a 2022 midterm issue, he and a colleague write in the Wall Street Journal. Council on Criminal Justice study of 22 U.S. cities found the number of homicides in 2021 44% higher than in 2019. Yeah, we know that. So guess what? People took notice of it. In a recent Gallup poll, 80% of Americans worry about crime. 53% worry a great deal. And because maybe crime is concentrated in the city, you think, well, that's just big city problems where the Democrats are. No, actually, suburbanites pay a lot of attention to crime in the city, not just because of whether they deciding whether or not to access the city, but because, as we've been trying to talk about, we're trying to get people to pay attention to it, trying to get people to understand what's happening as Chicago radiates out to the suburbs. Radiating it out to the suburbs includes the lawlessness of Chicago, particularly when the suburbs have given themselves over in recent election cycles to the same sort of identitarian hack politician as lord over the city of Chicago. Please see Naperville and so many other suburban hamlets. They have the same attitude about these things that Kim Fox and Lori Lightfoot and J.B. Pritzker do. Guess what? The same things will happen in Naperville that are happening in Chicago, not on the same scale for all sorts of other reasons, but they're going to happen. It's going to be less safe, and that's probably something that you want to consider.
But it seems all the Democrats are talking about is abortion and abortion rights and abortion on demand up until the woman can give birth and having our tax dollars pay for it and scaring female voters that are undecided in Illinois by saying, you know, if you don't vote for Pritzker, then your rights are going to be taken away. And that's, but they've tried the violencing and everybody cares about it and we're concerned and the way you live your life is different, you know, is what, you know, modes of transportation. You would normally take the CTA or the bus. You don't take those anymore. You just don't. No one does. Everybody Ubers their kids now because it's not safe. But they rolled that out and people are like, eh.
Who rolled what out?
Like Pritzker, when he talked, you know, Pritzker, Lightfoot, they talk about, you know, violence, but they don't have any solutions.
Well, I'm no kidding, because they're not they're interested in releasing violent criminals. What are you talking about, what they're talking about? Forget what they're talking about. What do they do?
They're doing nothing.
No cash bail, release violent criminals, demonize and defenestrate the police department, coddle rioters for... I mean, we talked so much about the fallout from COVID, and that's legitimate, and it should continue to be assessed. What about the fallout and the accountability for what happened in the city and the suburbs in 2020, in the summer of 2020?
Michigan Avenue has never been the same.
I know. What they're talking about.
I mean,
the question is, what are sensible people going to talk about? The question is, what are the challengers going to talk about? If you want people to reject those in charge, what are you talking about relative to what they've actually done? That's the conversation. That's the dynamic.
What's Darren Bailey's plan to stop the violence in the city and the suburbs?
I don't know. Why don't you ask him?
I will. Well, I know that he would, you know, obviously, this Safety Act, that would not go through if he is elected. That's for sure. And parental notification would be reinstated right away.
So we had this shooting in the parking lot at Six Flags last weekend. And on an investor call, the CEO, president and CEO of Six Flags, said that parks had become a cheap daycare center for teenagers during the breaks and summers, and they're looking to make changes, including hiking prices at Six Flags after they've seen a decrease in both attendance and revenue this year. Why have they seen a decrease in attendance and revenue?
For safety reasons.
Yeah. Because
you feel safe sending your kids to Great America?
I don't know. I haven't gone in a while, but I have a sense of what's happening there because it's happening throughout the city of Chicago and a lot of neighborhoods in the suburbs, too, like the downtown areas in the suburbs, too. These places are being ghettoized. You're turning these places over to a handful of losers.
Now, there are...
And you're pricing it such that the losers can get in on the cheap and then create mayhem. Yeah, it's time to... You know, where you can, as a private business, provide barriers to entry for those who are loiterers and thieves and ne'er-do-wells. Let's just be real honest.
Okay, and they have metal detectors on the way in, but where was that shooting? In the parking lot.
I understand.
And so what the CEO said, he wants customers that are less like Kmart and Walmart, and they're targeting people more that are Target customers.
Yeah.
That's what they want.
Right, that's what he's saying. We're going upmarket, not down market.
Right. Is that a slam on Walmart shoppers? But I get what he's saying, and I'm surprised that he had the courage to say it.
Well, I mean, Kmart and Walmart sell on price, and Target sells on a combination of price and quality. I mean, you can sell on price, you can sell on quality. I mean, it's not, you know, looking to be offended. You know what he's saying, and I know exactly what he's saying.
It's true. He's spot on, and I'm worried he's going to lose his job
please.
Over it. In this day and age where everyone's looking to cancel
fine,
culture.
Whatever.
Or that he might have to issue an apology
talk
to
about the
Walmart
Talk about the
shoppers.
Substance of what he's saying.
What he's saying is that damn right, 100% true. Truth, excuse me.
Kevin in Northfield, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Hey, guys. Once again, another great show. I believe it all comes down to an issue of time frame. Our civilization, our stable, safe civilization is disappearing before our eyes. And the reason is because of the policies of these terrible woke no cash bail types who are ruining the time frame of the entire population. In other words, you people are long time frame people investing in yourselves, using your time, labor, and money to build up our society and to create civilization. And as soon as we see this New York guy able to put on a pair of gloves and slug someone, and then he may get arrested, but he's out on the street in a few hours, society can't invest. The long time frame person can't invest their time, labor, and money into society when violence and mayhem is the rule of the day. That's my comment, and I love you guys. Take care.
Thanks, Kevin.
Thank you.
Tom Oswego.
Hey, good morning, Dan and Amy. I've been a small contractor here in Illinois for 33 years. I'm 62. My wife retired. I'm trying to retire, but unfortunately I can't move my business. Dan, you mentioned about politicians being – you're concerned more about the doing. I tell my kids every day, be a doer, not a talker. And that's the problem that we have in politics. We have a lot of talkers. Look at the Democrats. They're always concerned about messaging. We have the wrong message. No, you have the wrong policies. The other thing is they're not enforcing the laws. That's all they have to do. If they could enforce the laws, top down, politicians, citizens, things would be much better. But they're not doing that. The other real problem that I see in a lot of us small guys see who are trying to get out of the business is the influx of illegal immigrants. And you guys know me. I'm not against Mexican people. My daughter is married to a Mexican citizen. We love the guy. But there has to be rules, and there's not. So what's happening is in my business, the influx of, and I say illegal immigrants, are saturating the market out here, the employees, and they're bringing the cost structure down. So when I go to bid a project at such and such number, somebody else can do it so much cheaper. They may not be licensed, they may not have the insurance, but business owners and stuff, they'll take the chance. And so I lose the work, they get the job, they do a bad job, but they're gone in a year. And that's happening all over the small business industry out here. As far as Chicago goes, the crime goes, I do very little work in Chicago anymore, and I used to do 80, 90%. Our trucks have been broken into, broad daylight in a public parking lot. There's just, they don't care. They'll break into anything, and they know they get arrested, they'll be gone, they'll be on the street in 2 hours. So it is it's really not a difficult solution. It's just that it takes difficult choices, and we don't have leaders that will do that. And I don't see a way out of this if we keep going down this path. And I just hope that I make it to 65 or 67 so I can retire somewhat and move out of this state. Thanks, guys. I love you guys, man.
Thanks, Tom. Appreciate it.
Love you too, Tom.
Well, I mean, here's so you have to frame this. And it just doesn't seem that complicated to me in terms of the framing of this. At every turn over the last 4 years, you've had your authority taken away from you. Every turn, your parental authority, whether your kids are going to school or not, whether your kid has to notify you if she is a minor and wants to get an invasive surgical procedure, whether your kid can choose their gender and the medical procedures associated with flipping their gender.
Or changing their names without your knowledge.
Every turn, you're stripped of your parental authority. You have a governor who doubled the state's gas tax. You have a governor who attempted to impose an income tax increase on middle-income families. I don't care what he said about graduating the state income tax. That's the net result. So let's talk about what the actual outcome would have been. What's next? Retirement income? After all the funny money that was drop-shipped from federal government is eaten up, which it has been already. And, you know, and this, of course, is just an eye towards his dreams of mediocrity at the national level. Talking about Pritzker. Every time. So, and he opposes you lower to middle income families benefiting from the tax credit scholarship program from seeming to having the same choices for your kids that he has for his kids with when it comes to their schooling right at the outset. At every step, your parental authority is stripped and your options are constricted by this governor economically and culturally. So that's been negatively impacted. $2,100 more a year you're paying in state and local taxes, already coming in paying the highest in the nation under this governor. And what did you get for it? And then the lawlessness you see in Chicago that Tom from Oswego is describing, that Spiro from Kai's restaurant is describing, that everybody's describing, is going to be codified as state law effective January 1. It has been. Now we're just waiting for it to take effect in Jan 1. What is complicated about this? You have no regard for your physical security and you have no regard for your economic security. And you're going to let a bunch of hysterical, extremist, pro-abortion radicals make this election a referendum on rape incest exceptions? Are you out of your mind? Stop being so skittish, Republican candidates, and start speaking with moral clarity in a forceful way on the framing of the choice. This is painting by numbers, for God's sake.
It's news, opinion, insight. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560. idea.
Business owners, now's the time for your business to make the move to a locally owned business bank. Hi, Mike Gallagher here to let you know that you don't have to look far. Signature Bank was founded in Chicago with a simple mission to help companies like yours grow, succeed, and thrive. Their decisions are made locally by a terrific team that knows your name, cares about your business, and invests in your success. That's why Signature Bank is my bank. I'm a customer. As business owners, they knew that local family-owned businesses were not getting the help they needed or deserved. So, I invite you to reach out to my friends at Signature Bank today. Write the number down. Remember this phone number, Signature Bank, 773-467-5630. And learn all about this great bank, 773-467-5630. Or visit them online at signaturebank.bank. That's signaturebank.bank. Signature Bank makes commercial banking personal. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.
Only the biggest stories, only the biggest guests, and only the biggest opinions. This is AM 560, The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy. I like this piece from Tyler Cohen in Bloomberg about the 87,000 new IRS agents, the $80 billion in over 10 years that the IRS Expansion and Growth Reduction Act that Mr. 10% signed on Monday is going to provide. Bloomberg reports the company will use the money to add auditors, improve customer service, and modernize technology. And Cohen, who's an economist at George Mason University, you know, writes, I have general sympathy for this idea, but the more I read from its defenders, the more wary I feel. How do the IRS actually operates? One post describes part of the backward state of affairs over at IRS when it comes to IT. At the IRS, paper tax returns are not scanned into computers. Instead, IRS employees manually keystroke the numbers from each document into the system, digit by digit. It's easy to say the IRS didn't have the staff or money to make necessary upgrades, but software upgrades are supposed to save money by increasing productivity, allowing companies to do more with fewer people. A reasonable person could be forgiven for asking if an agency with a $13.7 billion budget isn't enough to put some cash up front. He goes on with other examples. A major milestone in upgrading the agency's 60-year-old database from 2014 to 2030 has been pushed back by 9 years. Despite the project being radically pushed back, according to the GOA's report on the issue, the agencies revised the program cost, the program's cost schedule and scope goals on numerous occasions, including 7 times between the years 2016 and 2019. As Cohen notes, that doesn't inspire much confidence about the operation of the agency. Maybe that's why they're having a challenging time making sure that people, regardless of their income level, aren't underreporting their income. Maybe it's less about staffing the agency with more auditors and more about streamlining the agency and getting some IT professionals in there who can upgrade the agency's infrastructure as long as we're going to have said agency and said complicated, interminably complicated tax code. Yeah, I love just sort of the business analysis of IRS because it's just so rare in politics. We focus on these things that the denominations are so astronomical they don't even mean anything anymore. We can't fathom it. You're just throwing money at things and then you're claiming what the money's going to do and then nobody ever measures what it actually does. And oh, by the way, nobody ever asks the questions about, you know, how does this agency operate right now? Is there any way this agency could operate more efficiently if it is to exist?
Why do you need to hire 87,000? That's a big ask.
Right. You know that government agencies never seem to achieve a kinds of scale, no matter how much money they receive. There's never an investment in return because it's never measured because who the hell cares? What's the difference? For more on all things economic, pleased to be joined by Scott the Cow Guy Shelody. He's the market specialist for Market Day Report at RFD TV. And he also hosts his own program. What is that, 1 o'clock Chicago time there, Scott?
Central.
1 o'clock, yeah, 1 o'clock Central, yeah. Right? Cow Guy Close, right? So, Scott, I took a sort of a idiosyncratic piece of the IRS discussion with respect to this $750 billion boondoggle, but your assessment of what sort of impact it's going to have. I mean, even a Keynesian like Larry Summers says that, and I'm quoting here for him here from his interview with Barry Weiss. By the way, this is like one of the most overrated economists in the world, including by Barry Weiss. But Larry Summers said, I'm happy with it, talking about the IRS Expansion Growth Reduction Act. I don't think its principal effect is going to be reducing inflation, but I do think it's going to serve some vital national interests in terms of protecting the environment and expanding health care and so on and so forth. And so what's your assessment?
Well, I mean, with the Inflation Reduction Act, it's supposed to do something about inflation, but nothing really in the act does anyway. So that's, they name those acts so they can say to people, you voted against the Inflation Reduction Act, like it's going to hurt you. I mean, the next bill is going to be Let Children Live bill, so they can say that you voted against letting children live. I mean,
right.
It's absolutely ridiculous. But 87,000, look, they initially said it was to go after the billionaires, right? That's where they were going to go. But all you have to do is do a second-level Google search to see that there's only 724 billionaires in America. And so you divide that by the 87,000, that comes out to be about 120 IRS agents per billionaire. So now you know that's an outright lie. Then you look at the number, $80 billion for 87,000 guys and gals. That's about $919,000 per agent. Now I know there's going to be some overheads and some things of that nature, but you know, you mentioned that they're redoing all of their trying to revamp their systems.
Yeah.
Well, it's a government job. Who's going to be incentivized to ever finish it? Some guys might think, hey, this could be a 20-year deal. I've only got about 20 years left. I might as well try to milk this as long as I can. There's no incentive to get it done early. There's no incentive to get it done early and right. And so, I mean, we could have done a lot better with a flat tax, save the $80 billion, not have to hire the 87,000, and you would have done better with capturing more income. All in the name of trying to raise capital for the Inflation Reduction Act. I mean, it's absolutely ridiculous. I mean, it's the height of idiocy. It's almost embarrassing.
Well, do you believe the Biden
administration? Things that are even more embarrassing. So.
Yeah. Do you believe the Biden administration when they said they're not going to audit anybody or go after anybody who makes less than $400,000 a year?
Absolutely not. They're going to go after people. You know what? The stats are this. The stats are they go after people that make less than $25,000 a year. That's the most heavily audited group because the government thinks that you must be making more than that, and we're going to have to take a look at you. They don't go after the guys that have all the 25 to 50 page tax return. They go after the people they think are cheating the system, so they go after the folks that are making, really, it's under $75,000. That's the biggest catchment group. But it's under $75,000 because they think, oh, you must be making more. Where are you hiding it? I mean, what a terribly dark way to look at your constituency. The whole thing stinks all the way around, and I can't believe anybody would ever sign up for it. But, apparently a lot of them held over. And you think about 87,000. I don't know, Dan, I don't know how much your Northwestern's football stadium holds, but, I mean, that's a packed football stadium on a Saturday afternoon. I mean, that's a lot of people. Yeah. And how are they going to find people in this environment that are qualified? I mean, you might find that you get audited next year by Otis or Mayberry, right? I mean, stop it.
Thinking about this in toto, though, and even throw in the phony baloney chips bill to the subsidies to Intel. At the end of the day, the $1 billion in subsidies and price controls, it's just a baby step further down the road to serfdom, isn't it? I mean, it's not going to really register when we're talking about sort of the short term economic landscape.
No. And we're heading down, you're right. We're heading down that road. I mean, I don't really have a ton of confidence that anybody on either side of the aisle is got the cojones to stop all this, because it's not going to be easy. And once people get, you know, we had this big debate on my show the other day about work ethic in America. I don't know if you saw that Jamie Dimon, he wasn't really saying it about American individuals, but he was more saying it about the administration. But a lot of folks, you know, took the story and ran with it about the American individual, and Elon Musk had said that before. But we have this, I mean, there's a systemic problem in America, and the government's just a mirror image of that, where everybody wants something for nothing, and nobody wants to put the time in for anything. And the more that people get something for nothing, we erode this idea of work ethic. And I think that that's a huge problem. I mean, I don't know how many times I heard it over the last 2 years, Dan, and maybe Amy, you've heard this too, where somebody is getting something off of the government and just waiting for that to run out before they actually start to go look for a job.
Oh, yeah.
But while they're waiting for that, you know, they're getting the equivalent of $15 an hour from the government, and somebody offers them a job for $17, and they look me right in the eye and they say, "Why would I go to work for 40 hours a week for $2 an hour?"
Right.
Yeah.
And if they have kids too. Oh, well, argument I've heard, like, well, I have kids, so then I have to pay for daycare, and I would make more money just staying home, not working.
And it's eroding, and the government's playing right into it, and that's what they want to do, because ultimately, if they could, they would have this universal basic income, and then they wouldn't have to tax anybody. They wouldn't have to audit anybody, because they know exactly what everybody's getting, and everybody would have to do whatever the government said. And that's what they're. I mean, I don't have a tinfoil hat on, but this is all going down this 100 huge highway to control, because they're going to start talking about this, you know, central bank euro cryptocurrency. So when we have a central bank cryptocurrency, and everybody's now you know, all their money comes electronically via crypto. You know, the government's one light switch away from shutting off everybody's money. Just be careful about, you know, getting too lazy and getting too, you know, comfortable, because we've proven that the American constituency is easily scared, will love to hand over all their rights for some sort of guarantee of safety, and at the same time hand over all their freedoms for convenience. And it just sickens me.
Well, let's talk a little bit about the world for people who have skin in the game and are productive. I mean, there's only so much empathy I can extend to those who've been addled by a government that preys on them and they're happy to underwrite, as you were suggesting. If you're not going to participate in thinking things through, then we'll just move on. So let's move on to productive people. The environment here for productive people. Home sales fell 6% in July. Housing market now technically in a recession, down 20% from July of a year ago. So we knew that was going to cool, but the R word in particular sectors, as well as the larger economy, certainly is being bandied about, however you want to redefine it. And I wonder if you think we're just at the beginning of this, or as seemed to be indicated by those who were just super excited, including on Wall Street, by Joe Biden's 0% inflation comments, looking at June versus July, we're a little overheated in believing that we've hit peak inflation and things are about to start getting better.
Yeah, I mean, isn't that funny? Like, if you don't gain weight from June to July, you weigh zero.
Correct. Right? Yeah, that's right. Yeah, that's right.
It's a great diet. Everyone's doing it.
It's absolutely insane. Here's where we're at with the economy. I think we're still in dire straits. I really do. We've had a short covering rally here in the stock market. You know, the Dow's down 250 today. But I would say we're at a crossroads here. Because the Federal Reserve can only do one thing, right? They can control interest rates. Now they have I don't want to get into the weeds on it, but they have a balance sheet that they can unwind or purchase. That will also be negatively affected. But just know that mainly they use interest rates, and they're raising interest rates to try to quell inflation. And by quelling inflation by raising interest rates, they're just killing the demand side of the equation. They're taking money off the street. They're making people lose jobs. They're expecting, I mean, it's insane that they're expecting unemployment to rise to get out in front of inflation. I mean, so this is what they're going to do. They're going to hit us with this hammer and kill the man. It's got, it's like the doctor walking out of your loved one's bedroom or in the hospital and says, "I've got great news. Your loved one no longer has cancer. A bad news is she's dead." Okay, that's what the Fed is doing right now. They're going to kill the economy to solve this problem of inflation. What they need to do is, that's the demand side, by killing demand, by killing the economy. Nobody's got any money, so they can't inflate prices anymore. What they need to do is they need to take care of the supply side of the equation, right? If we have more stuff to buy, it brings down the price of stuff to buy. And that would be number one, would be energy. Now, that's been coming down, but everybody's been applauding that's been coming down because the Fed's been doing whatever they've been doing. Well, yeah, when you put people, I don't need gas to drive to a job I don't have anymore. When they kill the economy, they're going to bring down oil. But we need to have oil plentiful, because that's what really is a great economy. You know, oil is power. And I think that when they start to slowly but surely work on the supply side of the equation, and not the demand, then we're going to be okay. They need to, another thing on the supply side is supply chains. But here's what's going to happen, I think, is they're going to beat up the economy. We're going to see slowly but surely inflation will come down, but nowhere near like it should. And we're going to have our interest rates right now, our base rates, like 2.25% to 2.5%, right? That's where we're at right now. You could see us get up to 4% and have oil trading at $70 a barrel, and everybody's like, oh, look, everything's fine, inflation's down. But because we haven't solved the fact that there's a shortage of oil, or we haven't solved the fact that we can't get supply chains up and running, those things can ignite overnight. And once that happens, you see an oil spike, you know, up to $100, $115 a barrel. There's a lot of folks out there that are still calling for oil to go to $120, $150, by the way. But all of a sudden we have inflation back, and we have interest rates that have doubled.
And so,
I'm worried about that happening.
So you still think that if we think we have stagflation now, you haven't seen anything yet?
Yeah, because we haven't solved the problem. We're addressing the symptoms. We haven't solved the problem. The problem is that we don't have enough energy. Look what's happening. I mean, look what just happened. They have a producer price index. I don't know the exact number in Germany, but it came out this morning in the 30s, like 32%. They don't have any energy. These people, I mean, what's coming down the road as far as energy problems in Europe is going to be historic. And we've already seen our energy prices, our net gas prices have spiked up. We have an energy problem here, and it's because of the World Economic Forum and all these people trying to get us off of fossil fuels. Folks, we can't get off of fossil fuels, and we're not going to. I just wish everybody would finally say it. We can't run America on wind and solar. This can't be done. Now, they can complement each other. I'm all for that, right, the hybrid. But there's no way. They're not fungible. You can't take away oil and substitute it with wind and solar. It's just not going to happen. That's going to cause death in the streets. We can't do it.
Germany, just to put the numbers, producer prices rose 37.2% on year in July. Energy prices in Germany up 105% from last year at this time. Price of natural gas is up 164%. Price of electricity up 125% in Germany. So if you have Western Europe crater come the winter, then, you know, we don't live in an isolated world, and obviously that impacts the United States as well.
Yeah, do those things sound like it's 2022 or 1822? I mean, think about it. And this is all coming from the greenies from the World Economic Forum. We got to get rid of fossil fuels, and we got to get rid of, basically get rid of people. But they're also the ones saying you can't use nitrogen anymore. You can't fertilize anymore. So they don't want us to grow food either. I mean, that's why the Dutch farmers are protesting. So I'm telling you, they're trying to constrict fossil fuels and food. Food and fuel is what they're going after. They've succeeded in Germany and in some other parts of Western Europe because they rolled over for that idea, and they wanted to do this ESG, right? They've all gone down that road.
Scott,
well, it's back up to Sri Lanka and Ghana.
Scott Shelody, market specialist for Market Day Report at RFD TV. He also hosts the Cow Guy Close at 1 p.m. on the same RFD TV. Scott the Cow Guy, thanks as always.
All right, thank you.
Thank you, and he joined us on our Turnkey.pro answer line.
Hear about the big stories of the day. then talk about them right here on Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560. The Answer. This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560. The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy. Sam Harris is a podcaster. He's a neuroscientist, New York Times bestselling author. He recently gave an interview to another podcasting team. They had a little confab about Trump and 2020 and 2016 and 2024 in no particular order. Other than Sam Harris's overriding perspective on Trump, regardless of the election cycle. And here's that perspective.
I mean, Hunter Biden, at that point, Hunter Biden literally could have had the corpses of children in his basement. I would not have cared, right? It's like there's nothing. First of all, it's Hunter Biden, right? It's not Joe Biden, but even if whatever scope of Joe Biden's corruption is, like if we could just go down that rabbit hole endlessly and understand that he's getting kickbacks from Hunter Biden's deals in Ukraine or wherever else, right, or China, it is infinitesimal compared to the corruption we know Trump is involved in. It's like a firefly to the sun, right? I mean, like it doesn't even stack up against Trump University, right? Trump University as a story is worse than anything that could be in Hunter Biden's laptop, in my view, right? Now, that doesn't answer the people who say it's still completely unfair to not have looked at the laptop in a timely way and to have shut down the New York Post's Twitter account. Like that's a left-wing conspiracy to deny the presidency to Donald Trump. Absolutely it was. Absolutely, right? But I think it was warranted. Right. And again, it's a coin toss as to whether or not
Sam, I'm sorry.
That particular piece.
I'm really sorry. I was the one that said we should move on. But you've just said something I really struggle with there, which is
the kids in the basement.
No, the kids in the basement. No. I'm interested in democracy.
Oh,
you're saying you are content with a left wing conspiracy to prevent somebody being democratically reelected as president.
Well, no, I'm content. Well, but the thing is, it's just not left wing, right? So Liz Cheney is not left wing, right? Liz Cheney is doing everything in her power.
You're content with a conspiracy to prevent somebody being democratically
elected. But there's nothing conspiracy. It's not. It was a conspiracy out in the open. It doesn't matter what part's conspiracy, what part's out in the open. I mean, I think it's like if people get together and talk about what should we do about this phenomenon. You know, if there was an asteroid hurtling toward Earth. And we got in a room together with all of our friends and had a conversation about what we could do to deflect its course, right? Is that a conspiracy? You know, like some of...
Sorry about that fastball slipping by the sensors there. Yeah, but here's the thing. He's a neuroscientist. Wow. Well, he's definitely not a logician. I mean, all that is just a fancy sort of hysterical ends justify the means sort of argument. There is nothing we shouldn't do to stop Donald Trump from being president. And that's somebody who would otherwise, you know, then will turn right around and cloak himself in the guardian of democracy garb that you hear from this sort. And you say, well, that's just some neuroscientist. He's an author. Big deal. That doesn't mean anything. That's just one perspective on the left. Okay. How about this? Edward Luce of the Financial Times, a reporter there, quote, I've covered extremism and violent ideologies around the world over my career, have never come across a political force more nihilistic, dangerous, and contemptible than today's Republicans. Nothing else. Responding to that tweet, I agree, and I was the CIA director, Michael Hayden. Are we starting to understand why there's concern about the most powerful law enforcement and intelligence and national security agencies wired against the people that we have as frankly was argued by Stephen Miller, a Praetorian guard in D.C. that decides who our rulers shall be, and I do mean rulers. And if we are so impudent to elect someone they find objectionable, then that person will be tossed out in one form or another by any means necessary because the ends justify the means. For more on all this, pleased to be joined by Brett Baer, host of course, Special Report, 5 p.m. Chicago time during the week. Number one bestselling author of To Rescue the Republic, Ulysses S. Grant, The Fragile Union, and The Crisis of 1876. Brett, thanks for joining us. Appreciate it.
Hey, how are you?
So, you know, I wonder if this FBI raid, the ongoing criminal investigation, turns out to be a 1/6 commission with actual enforcement power. In other words, it's going to be perceived by half the nation as as completely illegitimate based on who's conducting it and the way in which they're conducting it, regardless of what they may ultimately claim Donald Trump did.
Yeah, I mean, we're in that position, right? We're in the position where the country is definitively divided. And you know, you can present all kinds of things, but there is going to be, because of the past actions of the FBI and the DOJ, a lot of skepticism about what exactly is happening. I mean, I think that soundbite is really stunning if you think about it, but it is stunning, but yet not surprising. I mean, we hear that a lot in Washington from different corners of the left. And, you know, it is Trump derangement syndrome times 100. And it is true. That's exactly what's happening.
You know, Paul Sperry has a piece at Real Clear Investigations, too, about the FBI unit that's leading this probe into Trump. And it's the same cast of characters that was involved in the Russian collusion investigation. Yeah, Peter Strzok is gone, but Brian Auten, he was involved. He's involved, and he's the one that's the subject of a whistleblower complaint that he was trying to rat hole legitimate evidence against Hunter Biden, spike that investigation. You've got Jay Bratt, who's a donor to the DNC. He was a part of the Russian collusion investigation with Alan Kohler, who heads the counterintelligence division. Alan Kohler replaced Bill Priestap after he stepped down, after criticism of his performance during the Russia collusion investigation. And before he worked in London as the FBI's liaison with British intelligence and law enforcement, Kohler, who replaced Priestap, was close to Stephen Halper, the FBI contractor who the Bureau ran as an informant in an effort to suborn Trump campaign officials. And it just goes, Timothy Tebolt, who's another agent mentioned in the whistleblower complaint about spiking the Hunter Biden investigation. He's involved. He was promoted as special agent in charge of counter intel at the FBI's Washington field office. Kohler was, along with Timothy Tebolt, who was just reassigned recently after these questions about his conduct with respect to the Hunter Biden investigation were raised. I mean, it's remarkable to me that not that you had all this wrongdoing in during the Russian collusion investigation that was documented by the Inspector General, Michael Horowitz, but that the agency is so resistant to the appearance of impropriety that you have all of these same people or people connected to the people in the Russian collusion investigation that are still conducting this. Is this just another chapter in the Russian collusion investigation?
I mean, it really is remarkable. And Senator Chuck Grassley has sent a letter, as have others, to the FBI about political bias in different actions. And, you know, whether it comes to the Hunter Biden investigation or the investigation of Trump. Now, here's the thing. You know, this is the thinking, is that something is there and they have to keep digging. But they have the same team doing the same kind of things. It feels very familiar. It's sort of like Elvis in the final days. You know, the show was just the same. And, you know, people kept seeing it, and they kept going to it. But eventually you get to the point where it's like, wait, why don't you do something different if you're going to go after this? They're not. And in part because they have the leeway from the media to be able to do that. You know, I mean, nobody is doing what you just did is besides us. You know, we're really the only place, and, you know, conservative media, but and the news side, no one is doing any of that. They're kind of going along to get along and waiting for the next shoe to drop.
Well, all media has kind of, you know, formed a solidarity yesterday and hired an attorney to try and get that affidavit unsealed. But also in court yesterday, we learned the reason why the FBI is investigating Trump. Willful retention of national defense information, concealment or removal of government records, and obstruction of federal investigation. So it makes it sound like there's something there, or is this just a form of intimidation?
I don't know. I don't know until we know, you know, and I mean, you would think that they wouldn't go down this road again if they didn't have the stuff. You know, you would think that this is somebody somewhere says we can't look bad again. Mm-hmm. But we don't know. And, you know, they do say in the filing that there are witnesses who have testified to the grand jury, and that's what they're concerned about. So there's somebody on the inside, some buddies who are cooperating, and not just on this investigation, but on other investigations. Remember, there's like six investigations ongoing.
So Weisselberg, a CFO of the Trump real estate company, pleading, you know, guilty to tax evasion yesterday, and the cooperating with the feds, whatever that means. So where does that go? Are they going to get Trump on not reporting a condo paid for by the company or something like that? I mean, what's your sense of what Weisselberg has to say?
The Al Capone, you know, like you finally get him on taxes. Right. I don't know. Listen, you can be very skeptical of the government and very skeptical of the FBI because of what they've done in the past, and wait to see where it goes, and that there may be wrongdoing. You can be both of those things.
Yeah, sure.
And in the news business, we need to be that. You know, like for people who say this is completely, there's nothing here. Well, we don't know that there's not anything there yet. But we can also say the past is not, you know, prologue. It is just, you have to be skeptical of their actions.
Here's the thing. I mean, I agree with that. I think that's a proper right and proper statement. But there is one caveat to that. And the caveat is the same thing that you would say with respect to any person who is investigated or accused of crime. The fruit of the poisonous tree. If the means by which you obtained evidence are illicit, then the prosecution is illicit. And I think that that norm, that due process norm, is very much in question with respect to these law enforcement officers.
Fair. I mean, that's fair. If they have probable cause, that's why we're waiting to see the affidavit. If they have that, they're justified to get whatever they get out of Mar-a-Lago. But it's fair to raise that question and to, in the context of this is a former president of the United States who may be the political opponent in 2024 of the current sitting president,
right,
who sits over the DOJ. You know, it's not
a good look.
It's not a good look.
You know, it's I wonder too, just your intuition on this as somebody who understands that universe. I mean, could it be that Newsweek's story was right? These unnamed sources that suggest that they were caught flat-footed, they didn't think there would be this sort of blowback. Because the way that it took so long for Merrick Garland to make any sort of statement to the public, and it doesn't seem like they thought there would be a push to unseal the search warrant, you know, all the parts of it, the property receipt as well as the affidavit. It seems like they're playing catch-up from the public response to what happened.
It does seem like that, but it's just so hard to believe.
I know.
That they're that stupid.
Well, I mean, stranger things have happened.
I know.
It's so hard to believe that you don't think about the political implications, the what it looks like, the pushback from all corners. Just because you and your bubble think that Trump should never be president doesn't mean that 70 million people just voted for nothing.
Right.
You know, so you have to take into account everything. And I can't believe that they didn't think of it, but it's looking more and more like they may not have thought of it.
He is Brett Baer, hosts a special report on Fox News, of course, 5 p.m. Chicago time, Monday to Friday. Number one best-selling author of To Rescue the Republic, Ulysses S. Grant, The Fragile Union, and The Crisis of 1876. Brett, thanks as always.
We'll see you.
Thank you. And he joined us on our turnkey.pro answer line.
The more you listen, the more you'll know. This is Chicago's Morning Answer.
Morning Answer.
On AM 560, The Answer. Only the biggest stories, only the biggest guests, and only the biggest opinions. This is AM 560, The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy. What can you do when local law enforcement, particularly on the prosecution side, won't come through when it comes to keeping peace in the neighborhoods, keeping the peace in the neighborhoods? So far in Chicago this year, just updating, 441 murders, 2,260 people shot. And again, when you look at it on a per capita basis, Chicago, just on the crime of murder, not including all the other crime spikes, things like carjackings and assaults, but just on the murder rate, Chicago has a murder rate that's six times higher than New York, but only one third of what New Orleans is.
Wow.
All of our major cities, not just about, have given over to predators. I don't know how else to describe it. You have the same mentality in mayor's offices and prosecutor's offices when you go city by city and you start to look at it, from New Orleans to Baltimore to Memphis to New York to Chicago to L.A. So what can you do? Well, one thing you can do is try to fill the gap, build a community organization, those platoons of democracy that Burke talked about, voluntary action and association that Americans are predisposed to do to solve problems where the government falls down on the job. One such organization is Voices of Black Mothers United, which is a project of the Woodson Center in D.C., our friend Bob Woodson and company. And they're rolling out chapters of Black Mothers, Voices of Black Mothers United, around the country. I think there's more than two dozen now. Most recently, to our friends north of the Cheddar Curtain in Racine, Wisconsin, we're pleased to be joined by Sylvia Bennett Stone, director of Voices of Black Mothers United, and Nikita Hamer, the head of the recently launched Voice of Black Mothers United in Racine. Ladies, thanks for joining us. Appreciate it.
Good morning. Thank you.
So, Sylvia, just to set the foundation again, we've spoken with you before, but the unique position of Voices of Black Mothers United is you're talking about Black moms who have come forward to be violence interrupters who've unfortunately had violence visit their family. For example, your daughter was murdered at a gas station in Alabama. And I just want you and Nikita, you as well, speak to how that informs the work you're able to do and maybe the credibility you have that law enforcement doesn't have when you go to a family and you say, you know, this is how you cope and this is how you get through this with our help.
Yes, we feel like we mothers who've lost. And in Nikita's case, she brutally lost her brother, so she represents the sibling aspect of it. But we feel like we have the moral authority to actually go in and say, we understand. We know what you're feeling at this moment, because we do. You can't say that unless you walk that walk, right? Whereas we feel as though if we're able to do that, if we're able to help that family at that moment receive the most horrific news anyone can receive in this life and allow the police to do their job at that moment, and that is police that crime scene, because that is so critical that their eye is on finding evidence. It's so critical to closing a case. And we're able to wrap our arms around that family. It's a win-win on both sides, especially to the family, because that gives the family a little bit more sense of confidence that they will get justice.
So in addition, and in addition to justice, I mean, do you see routinely after conversation and consultation that families want to do more than justice? They want to see what they can do to prevent this from happening to another family in their neighborhood, you know, where they live, where they can have some impact.
Oh, absolutely. That is a part of our healing model. I always use myself as an example. I myself did not step outside of that pain until I stepped into the rim and stepped up to help someone else. There was a young lady. She lost her two-year-old. A bullet went through her window, and the two-year-old was in his crib, and he died. That was my first time stepping outside of my pain to help someone else. And once I did that, I realized it gave me strength. And that strength is the healing aspect of it. So if we allow and help one another to heal, that strengthens the families and the community. And that enables us to get back out there and say, enough is enough. I'm taking back my block. I'm taking back my community.
Now, has the Black Lives Matter movement helped you in any way? Because they've gotten some, as you know, large millions of dollars of donations from major corporations and from regular citizens who donated to that. What is their purpose in your definition? And again, have they helped you at all?
We are on two different ends of the spectrum. They have their agenda, and our agenda is the community and helping our people from within to have safer communities. So we typically don't meet in the middle. They have theirs, we have ours.
Yeah, but what if a mother, like she was, obviously, I mean, I can't even imagine what any of you are going through, but you needed to take time off of work. Could they help pay their rent or their mortgage so that they could have time to grieve properly?
We try to solicit funds through our own network, private donors, doing calls like this. We solicit funds to help in that area.
Nikita, who is the head of the chapter of Voices of Black Mothers United in Racine. Nikita, tell us what's happening in Racine and, again, why you decided to take up this charge of setting up a chapter there.
Good morning. Thank you. So here in Racine, I have a really unique and dynamic setup here where I am structured within the county government, and this is has become created a full-time position for me to do within the county, where I'm also working closely with the police, the school district, the sheriff's office, and they're kind of designing it for me to be put on the front line when it comes to the crisis response piece, because I do bring that lived experience, and it is being received. Of the 8 cases that we have so far this year, I've reached out and I've been in connection and received by those families, and it's just a genuineness, and it's just a just being transparent with my own healing process, you know, and letting them know one day it was my family, it was my death notification, and I have some similar emotions, but just knowing that finding a place to release that, and that came from that healing, being there for other people, being transparent, and letting people see how I grieved. Not so much telling them, you know, there's really no way, you know, because everybody is affected different, everybody grieves different, and it's a lifelong process, but just showing some ways, you know. And the most powerful way I found is by coming together and standing in that gap for someone else when it's their time of need. So just having the support from the police and from, you know, the county and the city, it just really strengthens and maximizes these efforts. And it's really, we're starting to see a lot of people even just come out with increased volunteer efforts that haven't necessarily experienced this, but they would like to be a part of the change we want to see in our community. So just taking on that leadership and being a role model and being a leader, and just helping everybody realize that the problem and the solution are amongst us members of the community.
Is that, you think, the model that works and that police are receptive to, like you said, with sort of partnering with police?
Yes. One of the aspects of VBMU is to promote positive policing. So to have them, you know, receive this initiative, support it, come to our events. We did a basketball game during National Crime Victim Rights Week, which was kind of our introduction to the city of Racine, and it was received, you know, and we were able to kind of put the stigmas down that people have about police and police have about people, and we were there just being humans in regular clothing, you know, doing something that we all enjoy, kind of getting away from that violent narrative to the fact that we're people and we have to share this community. So at some point we have to come together.
Is there anything different? You know, we talk so much about the big cities like Chicago or Milwaukee, but Racine's a suburban community. It's like 80,000 or so population. Is there anything different about a suburb like Racine as compared to the big cities in terms of approach or the issue the issues that afflict the city?
No, I think the issues are the same, especially being between a big city like Chicago and Milwaukee. So we get a lot of that traffic. We get a lot of that in between. We get a lot of families that travel between. And a lot of the same things are duplicated, whether it's through social media or music or just, you know, what's popular right now amongst the younger generation specifically, where a lot of this stuff is being duplicated in the smaller cities. And again, we're right in the middle of those big cities where we get a lot of that traffic through and a lot of those issues follow and duplicate in our city as well.
And partnering with police, does that also mean partnering with prosecutors?
Yes, we also work with the DA. We work with the victim witness department as well. So we're partnering with families that may have previously been affected before we existed here in Racine, but they're also working in communication with getting us that family information as soon as possible. That comes right from the DA, so I know who to contact. I have a faster turnaround with actually connecting with their family and assisting them in that grief process as immediate as possible.
Good stuff. Sylvia Bennett Stone, Director of Voices for Black Mothers United, which is a project of the Woodson Center, our friend Bob Woodson, that's out of D.C., and Nikita Hamer, who's the head of the recently launched chapter of Voices of Black Mothers United in Racine, Wisconsin. Ladies, thanks so much for joining us, and much success with your continued work.
Thank you.
Thank you so much, and they joined us on our Turnkey Top Pro Answer line.
There's only one radio show in Chicago talking about today's biggest stories and telling you what they really mean. That show is this one, Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560. The Answer. This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560. The Answer.
Morning, Dan and Amy. We talked about it a bit yesterday. A big reorg being proposed at CDC with Commandant Walensky talking about special forces.
We need to have a special forces, if you will, to deploy during pandemic times.
Do you think they're up to the task of now changing their whole culture and thinking of themselves more like special forces that can be deployed wherever they're needed?
I have no doubt that they're up to the task.
That's what she just said, reporter.
I know, that reporter was awful. I listened to that whole interview. He never even got, well, what does it mean, special forces? Because it sounds like they're going to be militarized in some way, doesn't it?
Yeah. They're going to get new uniforms.
Right, like the fatigues, or the, you know, with pink hue. Like, what?
We're going to see Rochelle Walensky wearing some sort of silly hat with epaulets and stuff. I don't. Special Forces. Dr. Joel Zinberg, Competitive Enterprise Institute Senior Fellow, Director of Public Health and American Well-Being Initiative at Paragon Health Institute. Dr. Zinberg, thanks for joining us. Appreciate it.
Good morning. Great to be here.
So one of the problems that Commandant Walensky identified was communications. She's really putting a positive step forward by invoking militaristic terms in conjunction with the CDC.
Well, look, you know, the whole purpose of the CDC is to deal with communicable diseases. This is not something that should require special forces of the CDC. This is the CDC's core mission. Everyone there ought to be concentrated on that. And what you saw during the pandemic, and now again with monkeypox, is that, you know, they're not concentrated on that. They're concentrated on almost everything but. They're concerned about environmental justice and health equity and social determinants of health. They say on their website that their priorities include the public health consequences of the climate crisis and reducing racial disparities in health and building public health approaches to violence. You know, those are all important things, but that's not what the CDC is supposed to be doing. So, you know, it's nice that, you know, she finally woke up and, you know, it's kind of like Captain Obvious. We had some real problems here for the last 2.5 years, and now we ought to get back to our core mission.
But Walensky stopped short of apologizing. She said they've had poor messaging and confusing guidance. Quote, in our big moment, our performance did not reliably meet expectations. Can you give me an example of that?
The master of understatement.
Yeah.
Okay, well, yeah.
Maybe she'll actually don the Captain Obvious uniform. Maybe that'll be the new uniform for the CDC director. Yeah, but the problem with that statement, as Amy's pointing to, is how did you not meet the expectations?
Right.
And we don't get detail.
Well, they were ultra, you know, by turns ultra cautious and then overly confident, you know, instead of telling folks both in the public and in the public health community, hey, this is a new virus, we're not sure, this is our best guess. At first, they were, you know, they were insisting on controlling everything. So you started off right at the beginning of the pandemic in February of 2020 with the CDC sending out a test for COVID that was flawed. And they insisted for the entire month of February that only their test could be used. So for the crucial first month of the pandemic here in this country, people couldn't get tested. You couldn't. There was no any possibility of containing and controlling the spread of COVID was gone because of the CDC. And then later on, they were doing things like, you know, going way beyond their statutory authority and insisting on things like an eviction moratorium, a nationwide eviction moratorium, which was, you know, scientifically dubious and also legally dubious because it was eventually thrown out by the courts. So, and throughout, they've done, you know, they're way behind everyone else in terms of promulgating information. You know, they're busy talking about mask mandates and updating their travel requirements way after states and localities have dropped all those things, because the states and localities, the public health people there, at least, are paying a little bit more attention to the scientific evidence.
I wanted to ask you about the Pfizer document dump. I mean, they FOIA'd this information, so we're going to get it slowly, and 300 pages come out, you know, every, I don't know if it's every 3 months or 6 months. But it showed that 44% of pregnant women in the COVID-19 vaccine trials lost their babies. Is this true? Is this fake news? I mean, do you know anything
I think you need to wait to see the whole thing before you draw any conclusions, and you have to. In any kind of scientific study, you've always got to see what are you comparing it to. In other words, was there a control group, people who didn't have vaccines, and how did they do in terms of pregnancy loss? I mean, the fact of the matter is a lot more women lose pregnancies early on than people are aware of. So that's why it's so important that this be done in a careful, controlled way. So you need to see the entire document before drawing any conclusions.
What about some other studies that have come out that are being bandied about? a study of 301 Thai adolescents from the ages of 13 to 18 monitored for cardiac symptoms following dose two of the Pfizer vaccine. Nearly a third of the participants reported effects of some kind, and 2.33% of the participants, which represented 3.5% of the males, exhibited biomarkers indicating damaged heart muscle. What should we make of that study and what it tells us about the relative benefits versus the relative dangers of the vaccine for adolescents?
Well, look, I mean, there's no question there are side effects of the vaccine. Everyone knows there are side effects of every medication. It's just a question of doing cost-benefit analysis. It's long been known that young men are the most susceptible to the inflammation of the heart and the sac of the pericardium around the heart. But that those effects, by and large, have been transitory. There's no real long-lasting evidence of any major problem. So, you know, but then, as you point out, you need to look and see to whom are we giving the vaccine? Is it someone who's perfectly healthy, you know, 20-year-old, no medical problems of any sort, who would do very well if they caught COVID? You know, that's a calculation that an individual or a parent for younger patients has to do with their physician to see if it makes any sense. I mean, this has been known for really almost since the start of the pandemic that the greatest risk is for certain populations, namely elderly, people over 65, and for people with multiple medical conditions. The risk to younger people as compared to people over 65 is like 1/1000th of the risk. So, you know, it's not a tremendous risk of going on to serious disease. That's why people really need to make that determination with their physicians.
So, right. So then how do you react to still we get NYU requiring all students eligible to receive a booster, receive the third jab by last month in order to continue to attend classes on campus. At D.C., you've got the mayor there saying ages 12 and up have to get vaccinated to go to school in person. What do you say to those vax mandates?
Look, I think at one point in time, the vaccination mandates, I'm always loath to say things should be mandated. But at one time, it made at least some sense because at least initially it appeared the vaccine was effective in interfering with transmission. In other words, if you vaccinated one student, you were presumably protecting other students as well because it would interfere with the chain transmission. But with the newer variants, you know, first Delta, now particularly Omicron, and then the various Omicron subvariants, that doesn't appear to be much of an effect anymore. In other words, any effect on interfering with transmission is really transitory. It's lasting a month, two, maybe three. After that, it largely disappears. So it's harder to justify those sorts of mandates anymore.
But kids can't go to school in Washington, D.C. on Monday if they're 12 and older and not vaccinated.
And yeah, 16, no, I think at this point it's kind
criminal.
Of a foolish imposition of governmental authority, and at the end of the day, they're hurting those kids a lot more than they're helping them. I mean, they're hurting the very people who they're supposedly trying to help.
Yes, there's also no longer a pandemic of the unvaccinated, I've noticed, because the CDC guidance is the same for both cohorts. And I wonder where you are. We've talked to Dr. Marty Makary the other week on this issue of what do we understand about the vaccine's effectiveness? Because as you mentioned, it went from it prevents transmission to it doesn't prevent transmission. And now there's some question about whether it prevents the fallback position. It prevents serious illness or death. There's a delta there that's positive in terms of preventing, reducing the chances of serious illness or death. But now that seems to be somewhat in question as well, doesn't it?
No, I don't know that that's really in question. It does seem to remain effective in that regard. However,
I think what you were making a point about earlier, which was that younger people have a very, very, very low chance of going on to serious illness anyway. So you're basically reducing something that's an infinitesimal risk to an even smaller risk. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it's harder to demonstrate that in young, healthy people. But in people who are more susceptible to a severe disease, it does seem to still have some effect, and it's definitely worth people getting vaccinated if you're in those groups.
And now the big thing is monkeypox, and I you know, went from 3,000 cases, now they're 14,000 cases in the United States. Should people who are leery of vaccines now because of the COVID vaccine miss, should they take the monkeypox vaccine?
Well, the monkeypox vaccine, you know, it's a funny thing. It's been around now for a while, but it was originally started as a smallpox vaccine. But it appears to be somewhat effective. But, you know, again, this is a situation where you have a particular group of vulnerable people who are getting monkeypox. I mean, basically 99% of the people in this country who are getting monkeypox are men who have sex with other men. So if I fell into that group, I would really want to get the vaccine. But this is not something you should be thinking about for the entire population.
Yeah, and we also find this updated report from NBC News, of all places, that the evidence suggests, according to alleged experts, skin contact, no, it's sex. It's
skin on skin, but
the skin contact that comes with sex, experts say, is probably much less of a risk factor. No, it's not skin contact. And in point of fact, not to get too far into this because I don't want to, the gay couple that had the dog that got infected with monkeypox said they cohabitate with their dog, whatever that means, and I don't want to know. But it's actually the intercourse and other sorts of sex acts involving gay men that this is the transmission, according to public health experts. This is where it's happening.
Well, look, no, it's not 100% clear that when you say sex, it would mean the way, for example, when we think of HIV or other sexually transmitted diseases, that it's transmitted in the various sexual fluids. That's not really 100% clear now. But what is clear is that it does, you know, you do have prolonged skin-to-skin contact during sexual encounters. And you also, by the way, I mean, it's a much less common mode of transmission for monkeypox, but it can be transmitted through large respiratory droplets, so that if you do have prolonged face-to-face contact with someone, it can be transmitted that way. So, you know, look, this is something that's, you would think there's a relatively simple solution here, you know, maybe for a few weeks, a month or two, let's lay off these sorts of contacts, and maybe we can limit the spread of monkeypox. Yeah, you don't even necessarily need vaccines.
Right. I know, but our health director,
The public health authorities seem to have been loath to sort of suggest that someone needs to change their lifestyle, even if it's just for a few weeks.
Oh, no. Our health director said,
I
asked her, and she said, we just stay with the same partner for 2 weeks. And I said, why? She said, abstinence messages do not work in this group with this group of people.
Well, look, you know, you don't have to be abstinent, but you do have to, try to confine your activities to people you know and people who you can check out that or do not have active disease at that point in time. The problem is really apparently that, you know, when it's men who have sex with men, it's men who have sex with a lot of anonymous men. So they don't know their partners and they don't know what they're getting into. And that's really, I think, is a message that the CDC and other public health authorities ought to be promoting a little more strongly. And I'm not again, they certainly should make the vaccines available too. And there's also a treatment that's in various protocols to be used. So all of those things are necessary and should be made available.
Yeah, I mean, you know, heaven forbid anyone comment on anybody's behavior, even when it's relevant. No, we don't want to do that.
Don't want to upset certain groups.
Dr. Joel Zinberg, Competitive Enterprise Institute Senior Fellow, Director of Public Health and American Well-Being Initiative at Paragon Health Institute. Dr. Zinberg, thanks as always for joining us. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thank you, and he joined us on our turnkey.pro answer line.
Before you see it on TV, share it on Facebook, or read about it in the paper, hear it here first. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560. The Answer.
Open mic! Open mic Friday! Call in now! Open mic Friday!
Dan and Amy, it's that time of the week. Open mic Friday, taking your calls. 312-642-5600, turnkey.pro answer line. Your comments, compliments, criticisms, general crack pottery. We'll take it all. We're already all filled up, so keep calling. We'll get to as many calls as we can. I do want to remember Brian Stelter, since he has been ash-canned by CNN.
And his show is too.
The magic cue ball.
This picture of him, if you're watching at our Matrix Home Solutions studios, what do you see when you see this? It's so smug. That is like the definition of smug.
It's not even smug. It looks like a baby's head with a receding hairline on a woman's body. I don't know. He's just so weird creepy looking. He looks to me like somebody who would be propositioning children with candy near a park. That's what he looks like to me. He's also a moron. So
and how he got the job in the first place, I have no idea.
One of my favorite moments was of Brian Stelter moments, because we played a few on his, from his ghastly show, just because he's such a good representative of the mindlessness of the new left. But when he showed up here in Chicago to attend a confab at the invitation of David Axelrod to participate in one of those Axelrod School of Political Skullduggery conferences, and those Chicago Thinker kids, the University of Chicago kids, that
they're awesome,
that drew on that panel and really, I thought, embarrassed them. This is a University of Chicago freshman, Christopher Phillips, with a question for former CNN magic cue ball Brian Stelter.
Hi, thank you for coming. My name is Christopher Phillips. I'm a first year at the college. My question is for Mr. Stelter. You've all spoken extensively about Fox News being a purveyor of disinformation. But CNN is right up there with them. They push the Russian collusion hoax. They push the Jussie Smollett hoax. They smeared Justice Kavanaugh as a rapist, and they also smeared Nick Salmon as a white supremacist. And, yes, they dismissed the Hunter Biden laptop affair as pure Russian disinformation. With mainstream corporate journalists becoming little more than apologists and cheerleaders for the regime, is it time to finally declare that the canon of journalistic ethics is dead or no longer operative? All the mistakes of the mainstream media and CNN in particular seem to magically all go in one direction. Are we expected to believe that this is all just some sort of random coincidence, or is there something else behind it?
It's too bad. It's time for lunch.
You have 30 seconds.
No, I mean, there's a clock that says 30 seconds. But I think my honest answer to you, and I'll come over and talk in more detail after this, is that I think you're describing a different channel than the one that I watch. But I understand that that is a popular right-wing narrative about CNN.
He just passed him off as some right-wing nut.
I mean, did you, on all of those substantive examples the kid gave, are those accurate or inaccurate? Of course, Stelter is a dope, so that was all he could offer is just the smear, the label. That's what the left does. Certainly those that are limited in terms of their intellect and skill sets, as Brian Stelter is. But it's interesting to see what will happen to CNN there. Anybody pay attention? I don't know. I don't know if it will go the way of trying to do, you know, as they advertise more just straight news, or try to moderate some and improve the intellect of some of their news readers and media critics and so forth. But, you know, I'll miss them.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah.
I don't know what you're going to do with your Sunday mornings.
Yeah, I'll miss them. Kevin, Austin, Texas.
I'm curious, when Brian Stelter went to walk over to him, did he give him his room key to his hotel room that night?
I don't know.
Anyhow.
Yeah. I'm sure they...
I think he's probably like, you know, get out of my space.
Yeah, Christopher
please.
Phillips
I'm
wasn't
okay.
excited about the prospect of a one-on-one with Brian Stelter.
Here's my number. Call me. You can meet me at the Hyatt. I'm curious on your thoughts of the Republican Party yesterday. Do you think they actually will come out and support Bailey? And then what are candidates like Cervantino to do? You know, the idea – I took a class with Tom Rosier years ago when I was in college. He taught influence the system. And he talked about how political parties are supposed to be moved by grassroots movements. Can the grassroots movement of people get involved in the Republican Party to change it from the bottom up and the inside out in Illinois? Similar to what some other people are advocating, this precinct strategy project.
Yeah, I think so. Thanks for the call, Kevin. I think it is happening. The question is, are the candidates paying enough attention, sophisticated enough, and courageous enough to embrace the revolt that is now above the surface, not completely, but some representation above the surface, whether it's against ridiculous and illegal gun ordinances in Naperville, or it's pushing back on curriculum at school board meetings. You know, that's all happening out in the public now, and candidates should be running toward that rather than running away from it. I'm talking about center-right candidates who want to depose the ruling class, if that's really their intention. So we're going to see. I mean, the landscape provides for it. I will continue to say that because it continues to be true. If it no longer becomes true, or if it no longer is true, then I will tell you that as well. But it doesn't mean that you just get to say, I'm a Republican, or I'm not somebody in office, and a pox on Pritzker's house and the rest of the Democrat socialists, and that's good enough. It's not good enough. You have to make arguments. You have to focus your message on addressing the physical and economic security concerns that people have. You have to introduce yourself to so many people and make sure that you are able to generate a comfort level with them vis-a-vis you. And those are still hurdles that many candidates, including Darren Bailey, have to clear. Rick in Downers Grove.
Hey, good morning. Hey, I discovered a couple of truisms. One is about college education and society. The other is about the Democrat Party. And the first one about college education, and COVID proved this, but the more college-educated people a society has, the weaker, more feeble, and easy brainwashed that society becomes. And again, COVID proved that one. And for the Democrat Party, the truism is ignorance you can fix, stupid you take to the grave. The Democrats who realize that this country is going in the wrong direction and educated themselves with shows like yours, Tucker Carlson and the like, and have changed their thought process about the Democrat Party, they were just ignorant and they've educated themselves. The Democrats riding the bus over the cliff, regardless of what the damage the Democrats are doing, those are the stupid people, and they're going to take that to the grave. Guys, have a good weekend.
Thanks for the call, Rick. Bob, Buffalo Grove.
Good morning, Amy and Dan. Thanks for taking my call. Another good week of discussions. Now that the Inflation Reduction Act has been debunked, as it does not really reduce inflation, the media has morphed it into the climate bill. Now I'm wondering if a real investigative journalist, the media, will assess on how this act will impact climate. Will climate scientists and engineers be asked to provide a critique after the fact? I have an issue when China's contribution to CO2 emissions is not confronted at all. We're going to be reducing ours, but China's going to be increasing theirs. And then we have the increased fossil fuel costs thanks to the bill, because they're going to be taxing the fossil fuel companies. There's so much more that is buried in that bill, and none of it's being addressed, and I hope somebody will take a look at it.
Thanks for the call, Bob. Rich, Indian Head Park.
Morning, Dan. Good morning, Amy. What I'd like to do is I'd like to compliment Governor DeSantis for firing the prosecutor for not doing his job, and I think that every governor around the country should follow his lead. Because if you're in any other profession and you don't do your job, you're going to be fired. So why is a prosecutor's job any different?
Well,
have a good weekend.
That's exactly right. We talked about that at the outset of the show this morning, that the suit that the prosecutor that has been removed by DeSantis filed, saying his free speech rights were violated and so on and so forth. He wasn't, just to be clear, to repeat, he wasn't disagreeing with DeSantis from a public policy perspective. I don't share his view. He was saying, I refuse to enforce these laws, these right. laws against a ban on abortion after 15 weeks, the laws against gender reassignment surgery for minors. I'm not going to enforce them. Well, that you're saying you're not going to do your job, and so I'm replacing you. It's pretty straightforward.
Yeah, and it was Hillsborough County, right?
Yes.
Hillsborough County prosecutor.
Hillsborough. Yeah. Miriam in Aurora.
Yeah, hi. Wanted to tell everyone to watch the Moment of Truth Summit this weekend on frankspeech.com for the truth about elections.
Okay.
Okay. All right.
Thank you.
Thanks for the call, Miriam. By the way, DeSantis had that press conference yesterday to talk about the latest accomplishment of an office that he and Florida Republicans set up, Office of Election Integrity, vote, you know, that root out voter fraud. 20 people who voted improperly because they hadn't had their voting rights reinstated after being convicted of murder or sexual assault are going to be arrested and charged with committing voter fraud. And this follows on DeSantis
start.
Prohibiting Zuckerbucks, DeSantis prohibiting ballot harvesting, DeSantis imposing requirements on counties to make sure they clean their voter rolls routinely. I mean, all good stuff and all stuff that could be done here if you had different leadership. David in Lansing.
Good morning. I'm continually frustrated by Republicans. Now, like Mark Zuckerberg, you know, used $400 million to basically help throw the election. Twitter continues to crush people by, you know, limiting their accounts or banning them completely. Google funnels like searches to socialist-friendly websites. And people, Republicans call into your show and say, what can I do? Yet they continue to use Facebook, Twitter, and Google. I want to remind people.
Alex Berenson's back on Twitter. Alex Berenson's back on Twitter after suing Twitter.
Attorney.
Yeah, that's right.
Oh, right. Yippee. You know, I want to remind Republicans, when you go to these websites, their traffic goes up. They get higher metrics, and they can ask for more money for advertising. And you're giving socialists more money when you use these websites. What can I do, Dan and Amy? Give the socialists more money by using Facebook, Twitter, and Google? I mean, it doesn't make any sense to me. I don't use any of those anymore.
All right.
So have a good day.
Thanks, David. Bob Edison Park.
Yeah, going off what your last caller just said about the Republicans and an identity crisis, I want to talk a little bit about Mike Pence, just bring up a couple quick points. I was never a fan of Mike Pence, even from 2016. I thought he was going to be Trump's George Bush. He was going to be Trump's Bush for Reagan. I mean, I'm stammering, stuttering. He was going to be what Bush was for Reagan. He was the establishment guy inside the tent. And a couple of things with Pence. Pence was a globalist free trader. He never was with Trump on any of the free trade agreements. If you look at his history of his voting record, there wasn't a outsourcing that Pence didn't love. The other thing is on the Fourth Amendment, from the Patriot Act on up, Pence 100% lock stock with the establishment swamp on taking away the Fourth Amendment. And lastly, Pence totally screwed up the COVID when he was the COVID czar. And that might be because one of his biggest contributors is Eli Lilly. Thanks, guys.
Thanks for the call, Bob. I agree with the characterization of the record because Pence was more of a free market conservative than Trump is. I completely disagree that Pence was George H.W. Bush to Reagan. Completely disagree. Pence was a loyalist. Pence unfailingly carried water for Trump.
Yep.
And with respect to COVID, that is the response to COVID, the empowering of Fauci and Birx, the tardiness with expanding the circle of advisors and presenters on COVID policy to the public, that's on Trump. Mm-hmm. And if you can't hold the president accountable on something like the response to that while he's president, then you're not being very honest. You're not really applying an equal standard of accountability to politicians, particularly presidents of the United States. So let's get a little bit real here. Mike Pence was the problem with the COVID response. Mike Pence did the best to put a good face on the approach that Trump had decided to take and with whom he decided to take it. And that is on him. Kip, Stillman Valley.
Oh, thanks. Hey, listen, maybe you can help me out here, but let me kind of get to where I'm going with, like, a lot of callers I've heard in that saying, the laws aren't being followed. What's in place for, say, the CDC to go, they're not following total logic and the science. For the protection of our borders, we're not actually turning people away from the border. To the breaking down of existing systems that have worked for hundreds of years, to say that it's broken and now they want to re-image it to their liking, and who in the heck would want their input on what they are actually destroying that has been working for us, say, in the Trump days? And then what has happened for them destroying it and say it's broken, now have them to have even a little bit of an input on what we should do in order to make things better?
Yeah, well.
It's suicidal. Thanks.
Well, thanks for the call, Kip. Yeah, well, that's a question of who's in charge, isn't it? Before we take Chuck from Delavan, I think, because I'd like his comment on it, I think I'd like to hear more about these designer vaginas you speak of.
Well, it's a thing. I learned about it when I worked at a different radio station. When Big Man Rowe, we talked about it one day, but it's called designer vaginas. Basically, thank you. The surgeries have doubled in the past year, and there's one reason. Do you know what it is, by the way? So you can design your vagina. So you could take the labia,
menorrhea,
it's the outer area of the vagina, and make it more compact and closer to the body. But then you can do designs. You can make an hourglass shape, or you can do some squiggles.
Yeah.
You know?
Can you, like, make it into the form of, like, the logo of your favorite professional sports team?
I don't know, but it costs $4,000. And the reason why people are doing it, leggings, tight leggings. So if you have a problem, like, people have a problem, so it looks like they might have a package. It may be, you know.
Uh-huh.
And they really don't. They just have a large labia. And people get it. It's $4,000.
Interesting.
But it's a thing.
So if I see something like,
I don't know if you have to sit on a donut for a week.
Oh boy.
I don't know.
I'm going to be, you know, walking down the street and say, oh, I see you're a Reds fan. Chuck in Delavan, Wisconsin.
Sit on a donut for a week was the name of one of my garage bands. Hey, I've been warning you guys about this for a month. If you ain't got your Uber drivers all set up, I'm going to be pressing the flesh tonight at the Venetian Festival and kissing babies, but I'm going there to see the Lunch Money Bullies. If you want to be at a great party, you should get everything lined up, your Uber drivers and your hotel rooms. It's going to be a great party, Venetian Festival, tonight.
All right.
Thank
you.
Thanks,
Ed Chuck. Just a word of caution. I would ask if you could kiss those babies before you kiss those babies, just to be safe.
Don't pull a Biden, okay?
Yeah.
Connect with Dan and Amy on the AM 560 The Answer mobile app. Just text the word app to 64636 to download the app today.
Thanks for listening to Chicago's Morning Answer podcast, sponsored by Signature Bank. Signature Bank takes pride in helping customers grow their business and provide unmatched banking expertise, custom financial solutions, and the industry's best technology. So whether you're a business looking for a deposit relationship or needs a ready source of financing, Signature Bank is the right bank for you. Call today at 773-467-5600 to hear how Signature Bank can help your business grow and thrive. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.